An employee with the Transportation Security Administration gets her job back after being fired while being pregnant. TSA ruled Amanda Kincannon's pregnancy made her unfit for duty and subsequently fired her. The decision was eventually overruled by TSA's Internal Review Board, and she was recently reinstated. The incident was made public by the American Federation of Government Employees. I spoke to Deborah Roth, a partner at the law firm Shaw, Bransford & Roth, for some more insight into this case. She says this is not exactly unheard of.
What's not mentioned in this press release from AFGE is, you know, just a few weeks earlier, the very sort of almost identical case came out of the Supreme Court of the United States, Young versus UPS. And, you know, she was a female UPS driver, and she didn't get fired, but she did not get an accommodation. They would not give her an accommodation. They would not let her come to work because she was pregnant and had restrictions on lifting. So really very, very similar cases. And so when you say you really can't believe it, you know, here's this case that, you know, people like me in the civil rights community had sort of been watching and waiting for. And all the courts below in the UPS case found in favor of UPS that they didn't have to accommodate her, that she wasn't being discriminated against because of her pregnancy. And then the Supreme Court, you know, took the case and explain to everybody why, in fact, she was being discriminated. So I actually read the AFG press release waiting to hear them talk about the case that just came out of the Supreme Court, you know, and it wasn't there. I wonder to what extent the TSA employee might have her own separate, you know, EEO claim now that, you know, she can pursue under the new case law out of Young versus UPS.
It might be a good idea to review exactly what the law does say.
Sure.
About pregnant women.
Sure. And it's the Pregnancy Discrimination Act of 1978. And what it says is...
And by the way, this wasn't passed 3 months ago either then.
No. But it doesn't look like when you read... It's very unclear. You know, the press release from AFG is more like a promotional, you know, this is why AFG is good and you should join us. So it really doesn't explain... You know, from a legal perspective, I can't tell you whether she had a pregnancy discrimination claim. I can't tell from the description why they fired her. What was the legal reasoning? And you can't tell. She actually, to me, this is the most incredible part of the piece of news that comes out of that story. You know, yours is, I can't believe they're still doing this to women. Mine is, I can't believe the TSA Internal Review Board reversed the removal. TSA's come a long way, Tom, if, you know, the Internal Review Board actually is willing to be open-minded and listen to an employee and apply the law fairly. So for me, that was really just incredible news. But you don't know why legally they reversed the action. So the Pregnancy Discrimination Act of 1978 has applied to the federal workforce since 1978. And what it says is you can't treat a pregnant woman, right? And I use the word woman sort of, it's unnecessary because, you know, only women...
So far.
Right? Only women can get pregnant. But you can't treat a pregnant woman differently than another person of any gender who has similar limitations as the woman who's pregnant, right? So, first of all, you can't discriminate because of pregnancy. You can't make employment decisions because of pregnancy. But when a pregnant woman in the workplace needs job accommodations, she can't be treated differently than a non-pregnant person, man or woman, who has a similar limitations.
Well, let me ask you this. Suppose, and I'm just making up an absurd example just to try to find out what the point here is. Suppose a person's job requires them to move sideways through a 16-inch wide portal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are...
Sure, if you worked in the water company and the sewer company and Pepco, you might,
well,
you know...
Well, you might.
Yeah.
And so if you are, if you get overweight or you are pregnant into a late stage and you are, you know, front to back deeper than the space in which you are required to pass, mm-hmm. What does the law say about that?
Well, that's your limitation. And so, you know, how do they deal with women who can't, who are oversized, who aren't pregnant and can't fit through the portal, or men? So you have to look to how the employer is treating non-pregnant people with the same limitation.
So in other words, if the organization were to say, you know what, you've got, they could reassign you, probably that's the safest thing to do and maybe the best thing, the right thing to do.
In the UPS case, so, you know, whatever her long story is about getting pregnant, she finally gets pregnant, but she's had a troubled history in getting pregnant. So when she finally gets pregnant, the doctor puts her on a lifting restriction. She can only lift 20 pounds. In the UPS standards, you got to be able to lift 70. So there's a litany, I don't read the cases below, but the way it's described by the Supreme Court is there's just a litany of examples of individuals, men or women, who maybe because of an on-the-job injury, right, have a temporary restriction. They can't lift the 70 pounds, and so they accommodate them. They allow them to come to work. You get paid, but you're not going to be in a job for this amount of time where you have to lift 70 pounds, and they wouldn't do it for her.
We're speaking with Deborah Roth. She's a partner at the law firm Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And I guess in the federal workspace in general, people are doing office or managerial work. There's not that much physical work. But in the case
sure.
of TSA,
yeah.
it's kind of in between. You're not
yeah.
lifting. Well, you might be lifting luggage from time to time, and you're
oh,
in
no,
contact with people.
I'm sure they have physical requirements in the job. And I'm sure that you have to be able to lift a certain weight limit because, you know, even the screeners, you know, because you might have to deal with luggage. And it is a physical job. And, you know, there's walking, there's lifting. There might be the physical element of dealing with restraining a person. So you can't tell from the press release what the issues were, right? What was the legal debate? To me, the press release is like a promotional promotional for their rank and file and to recruit new members. But when I read it as a lawyer, right, the two things that stuck out for me were, oh my gosh, just a few weeks ago, the Supreme Court issued a decision almost on an identical set of facts, right? And isn't that interesting, right? And then the TSA Internal Review Board, because remember, these employees, the screeners by statute, do not have an appeal right outside of TSA. They cannot go to MSPB, the screeners. So their appeal is internally limited. And, you know, frankly, since the decade or more that TSA stood up, you'd be hard-pressed to find a consensus amongst the TSA workforce that decisions about employment were made fairly, that employees were heard and fairly listened to. So when I see that and I see the Internal Review Board reversed and reinstated her, I say, wow, TSA has come a long way. And I wonder in the background whether she has, you know, a discrimination claim under the Pregnancy Discrimination Act and how that now is affected by the decision from the Supreme Court just a few weeks ago.
All right, so in general, what should managers do? I mean, even though the law has been around since 1978, sounds like it's worth reviewing again. What do you do when presented with an employee who is pregnant?
Sure. If the pregnant employee isn't asking any job accommodations from you, then the answer is you do nothing. You treat the pregnant person no differently than non-pregnant individuals, right? But if the woman who is pregnant is asking for some sort of it's usually a temporary. It's hard for me to think of an example where it was permanent, right? It's like usually during the course of the pregnancy. They're asking for some sort of restructuring of the job. Most agencies today, I can't think of any that don't, treat it like a reasonable accommodation request, and most agencies have centralized and have a very elaborate procedure for any employee, whatever their medical condition is, to request an accommodation in their job because of a physical impairment. So you would, if the pregnant individual seeking some sort of restructuring because of a condition related to the pregnancy, you would send them into that reasonable accommodation process.
And so in 2015, if you see 100 cases a year, what percentage would you say are
rare
accommodation cases?
Accommodation cases for pregnancy?
Or that or any other physical accommodation?
Oh, yeah, no, they're up. I'm not going to put a percentage on it, but I remember it was about 10 years ago when the Supreme Court started issuing decisions on the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act, which was a statute that applies to the private sector, passed in 1991, giving private sector employees the right to seek a reasonable accommodation for a disability. Federal employees, Tom, have always had that right since 1973. But the greater workforce in our country is the private sector workforce. So the cases start trickling up to the Supreme Court interpreting the Americans with Disability Act. And, you know, what does it mean to be disabled? What accommodations are reasonable? And I remember in the first few cases that came out of the Supreme Court, you know, they were more like a PhD exercise than a legal opinion, where it was a lot of data about the American workforce and how many individuals go to work with some physical impairment. And of course, it covers mental impairments, but some physical impairment. How many people go to work and would qualify under the statute as a disabled individual? And it was just an overwhelming percentage of people who have something, some disability that might, depending upon the job they chose, right, might impair their ability. So more people in the United States are probably covered by the Americans with Disability Act, which for federal workforce is the Rehabilitation Act of 73, same statute enacted separately. More people are affected by that than any other civil rights law when you think about it. So that's why agencies now have a very elaborate defined process for entertaining accommodation requests. And it's really very well done now in the government.